little bit about a demonstration project that the National Multiple Sclerosis Society implemented. And it was a demonstration project to reduce communication barriers for patients with multiple sclerosis who are Spanish speakers. I want to thank our generous funders, the Medtronic Foundation, for support for this project and many projects that we've done in the area of underserved populations. To start by telling you just a little bit about multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis is a chronic, progressive, unpredictable neurological disease that affects the central nervous system. That's the brain, the spine, and the optic nerves. We believe there to be 350,000 to 450,000 people with multiple sclerosis in the United States. And people are diagnosed as young as 2 years old and as old as 70, but by and large, most people are diagnosed between 20 and 50 years of age. It's thought to be an autoimmune disease where the body attacks itself, and it's believed to have an environmental trigger, which we are many research initiatives are now looking at what those might be. Symptoms come and go. It could be blurred vision, loss of balance, poor coordination, slurred speech, tremors, numbness, extreme fatigue, problems with memory and concentration, paralysis and blindness. It is not a fatal disease. Most people live close to normal lifespan with progressive disabilities. But the National MS Society medical advisors feel very strongly that it is very important to diagnose this disease as soon as possible and to get people on one of the approved disease-modifying therapies that are now available in the last 12 years. And it's one of the reasons why it's really an urgency to get underserved populations to get proper medical treatment and be able to communicate with their physicians. Hispanics, Latinos, particularly monolinguals, have difficulty receiving appropriate medical care due to lack of culturally and linguistically proficient services. We conducted focus groups in 2002, and one of the areas that came up as a real challenge was that people felt that they were having difficulty communicating with their healthcare providers about their symptoms, about treatments, and also, the National MS Society supported the Presidential Executive Order to improve access to services for persons with limited English proficiency back in 2001. We have an advisory group, a National Hispanic Latino Advisory Group, that has really been very effective in helping the National MS Society to work more diligently at reaching this underserved population. So our collaborators in this effort were three MS clinics throughout the country. Now, the National MS Society has a great opportunity here because we have affiliations with over 180 MS clinics around the country. So it was a great opportunity for us to work closely with these clinics. We chose clinics. Well, so the three collaborators were Bronx Lebanon Hospital in New York City, Los Angeles County University of Southern California MS Clinic, and the Houston Ben Taub MS Clinic. And we worked with three chapters of the National MS Society in those areas to really help facilitate this initiative. Our goals were to improve access to MS specialty care by reducing language barriers and to assess the patient-provider communication. So we were looking really at understanding the impact of these services on MS clinics. The funding allowed us to provide these services free of charge to the clinics, and it also provided funding for the training and the resource materials that we provided to the interpreters and to and ultimately to people with MS who were going to these facilities. We chose areas in the country that had large Latino populations, where there was chapters that had bilingual staff, and we picked MS clinics that had strong relationships with the National MS Society. Here's what we learned. We did not meet with success at the very beginning of this project when we just went out and said to clinics, would you like to have an interpreter service. There was some fear that we were, that either they weren't providing interpreter services already, because every hospital said that they had interpreter services available. We realized that the way we got these clinics to really want to participate is that we made it a benefit to the provider. We're going to help you communicate better with your patients. And we were able to, and that was actually very helpful to us. There are sites that would have participated had we approached them differently at the beginning. The other thing we learned is that you have to have a lot of patience and persistence in working with the hospitals themselves. So once the hospitals agreed to work with us, we had to figure out who at the hospital we needed to speak with. Was it the community affairs department? Was it the neurology department? Was it the volunteer department? It was not easy to figure out how to work within the systems of the hospital. But with patience and persistence, we were able to figure it out. In two of the three cases, we ended up through the volunteer department. So we were looking for medically trained interpreters, and there really isn't any standardized certification for medical interpreters. But we contracted either with an agency in one case, with individuals, interpreters in another case, and at one hospital they actually had interpreters on staff. But what we did with the sites where we didn't have hospital employees who were doing interpretation is that we did role playing with them to assess their skills. So we had the bilingual staff member and someone else actually do a role play, as you know, and that was one of the ways we figured out whether or not we wanted to use the interpreters. So many options exist, and actually it was a very successful initiative to do that role playing, and the interpreters actually were pleased that we were taking that initiative. The role of the interpreters are service to patients, service to healthcare providers, and feedback to the National Mass Society, and they participated in trainings, meetings, and conference calls. The interpreters were an integral part of this project, and I think that really helped us to build a sense of loyalty with the interpreters. They felt like they had an important role in this initiative. When we looked at the assessment tool, we asked them to look at it in advance and to give us their feedback. So they were part of the process from the beginning. The training we did was both on a national level and a local level. We did a 3-hour training nationally. There were 12 interpreters that were trained. We talked to them about multiple sclerosis. We talked to them about disability etiquette. So we say a person with multiple sclerosis. We don't say an MS person. We don't say sufferer. We don't say wheelchair bound. So we talked to them about using appropriate language when you work with people with disabilities. We talked to them about the goals of the program, expectations. We talked to them about the survey instrument we were going to be using to evaluate the program. And then locally, they got trained both additionally by the local chapters and by the institutions that they were working with. So they got trained in HIPAA, the hospital. In the cases where they went through the volunteer department, they had to be trained as volunteers for that hospital. The other thing we did in preparing the interpreters is that we developed a glossary of MS-specific terms. There were copies, so I hope you have those. And that was important to us for consistency's sake, so that we were using the same terminology about MS symptoms and treatments consistently across this initiative. And we scripted the interpreters in terms of when you first meet a patient, inviting them to be part of this project, and then at the end. Oh, the other thing we did in training was we talked about the need to interpret everything going on in that room. So even if there was a sidebar conversation, we wanted them to interpret everything that was going on. We also wanted them to be clear about interpreting accurately. So how did it work? The interpreters basically were scheduled on a regular basis at the sites. Spanish-speaking patients were invited to participate. We used consent forms because we did follow-up surveys. And our chapter staff was actually present at the clinic. We used used a post then pre telephone survey by a trained Spanish speaker. So the follow up calls were made 2 to 3 days after the encounter. We tried up to 10 times. So the first set of questions asked about the service they received and how it impacted communication with the physician. So essentially that was the post test. And then we asked a similar set of questions that started with, if you think back to a previous visit you had when there wasn't an interpreter available, and then we asked the same questions again. And it was a 5-point scale, strongly agree, agree, neither agree nor disagree, disagree, or strongly disagree. And the questions had to do with communication. Did you feel that your questions were answered? Did you feel that you understood what the doctor said? Did you feel like you were able to tell the doctor the way you were feeling? The interpreters, every session, they reported on a service log, and they talked about any challenges they encountered, their relationship with the healthcare professionals, and anything they wanted to tell us. And this helped us to adjust the services as the program went on. This initially was going to be a 6-month pilot project, and we extended it to an 11-month project. The physicians were surveyed at the end of the program with a written survey, and then the chapters evaluated the program, and they talked about the process of implementing this program, what challenges they had to deal with, what solutions they took to overcome the challenges. So 120 people with MS were served, 89% participated in the survey. So 100% of the respondents suggested improved communication with the physician compared to 7.7 prior to the service. And 100% of the respondents indicated understanding physician information compared to 12.9 prior to the service. All the physicians indicated excitement at the end of this project, and all of them wanted this program to continue. And the interpreters really did feel integral to the demonstration project. So some of the lessons we learned. Well, we do feel strongly that interpreter services reduce communication barriers. We do have to figure out how to continue to fund these programs. Evaluation tools need to be culturally modified. We had a little bit of trouble with the 5-point scale. People didn't understand the difference between strongly agree and agree. And also in Spanish, it was the person giving the surveys felt that they had to repeat and explain the questions carefully. So we would need to evaluate the tool. Efficient use of interpreter time. There was a lot of downtime. We tried to get the physicians to schedule patients so that we had, you know, 3 or 4 patients needing the service at the same time, but that wasn't always possible. And so we had to come up with ways to utilize the services of the interpreters during the time that they weren't seeing patients. So for example, in some sites they were used to actually do translations. They were used by other places in the hospital. We were paying for them, but we felt that we might as well utilize them efficiently, so they went to other departments. And they also spent some time just learning about MS. So they would just go with some of the physicians just to sit in on appointments with permission of the patients, just to understand MS better. And that the glossary of terms has now really taken off as an important resource. It's on our website. It's used to help people with MS learn about the disease in Spanish. It's used for all the translations that we do at the National MS Society. I guess my time is up. But the California site was so excited by this project that the hospital has asked the National MS Society to help them continue to do professional staff training on cultural competence. Thank you.
Okay, and the floor is now open for Q&A. I'm going to ask our presenters to please come to the mic and restate the question so we can capture it on the recording.
question. The question was, the question is, can in the health interpreter network that we have in the county, can a patient request a specific gender? As far as I know, no. It's depending on the language that the person requests, it's whoever's available at that moment, that's they're routed. So the two other counties are participating as well. And so they're off-site. They're in San Bernardino, San Joaquin counties, and it's just whoever's at the available at the moment. And I hear that. I definitely hear that. Absolutely. Question is about threshold. How is threshold or concentration languages set? And that's actually from the Office of the Civil Rights. It's the Safe Harbor Guidelines, and it's linguistic, limited English proficient language group in a service area that's 10% of that population or 3,000 individuals, whichever is less. So in our case, it's not 10% of the population. It's over 3,000 individuals, yeah. So we use the number, not the percent for threshold.
Any questions for any other panel?
I actually had one question for Christine. Actually, how much, Christine, I'm sorry, the interpreter for the automated video calls, how much does that actually cost?
So again, the question was on the cost on the video conferencing. And the video conferencing is actually part of the hospital. And the way our county works is the hospital and the health department are separate entities. So I'm not entirely sure how much it costs, but I can find it. Actually, my colleague Srija might be able to answer this question. Sorry to put you on the spot. Srija Srinivasan, she's the director of the Health Policy and Planning Unit. The question is, do we know how much the health interpreter network costs? So the total was $500,000 across the network of hospitals in California.
Any other questions? I'm going to ask the panelists. I know we still have a few minutes left, and I know you all rushed, and we're very good about sticking to the 12, 13-minute piece. Oh, someone is back there. Okay.
Video conferencing in response to the gender question. mobile, so it can be put behind a curtain so that if the interpreter is male and the patient is female, then they're not actually seeing the consultation about something else they wanted.
All right, well, I want to thank our panelists for an excellent presentation.